Daniel and the lion's den. But what we're going to find out rather quickly is it's really more than a story for kids in Sunday school. It's packed full of biblical principles and truths. And I kind of want to just put everybody at ease. I know parents, as a parent, you sometimes worry about, man, my kids, in the big service, they're going to run around, they're going to act crazy. Look, I have four kids. It's okay if the kids, you know, get a little rambunctious. I'm used to it. And honestly, every time I hear a kid in service, my mind goes to Psalm 8. He is out of the mouths of babes and nursing infants, he has perfected strength in the Old Testament, praise in the New Testament. So every time I hear that, that's where my mind goes. Relax, it's okay to have the kids with us today. So this was a good introduction to where we're at. Now, we're at an interesting point in the book of Daniel because this is really the last chapter where we are going to read about interactions between Daniel and kings, anything like that. From this point forward, it's going to be a lot of visions and dreams. And we're really going to dive into that, and I'm going to do my best to make it applicable. I think a lot of the dreams and visions are very applicable to where we're at. But we kind of round out this narrative section with this story of Daniel. And you'll recall from last week that we have had a power change. There's a new empire now that's taken over the Babylonian Empire. While they were partying and having a good time, this Medo-Persian army was crawling under the river gates, invading the city. And that very night, the last king or co-regent, co-king of the Babylonian Empire, Belshazzar, was killed. And now we have the Medo-Persian Empire that's in charge. And Darius, however you want to pronounce it, he is the new king. And we might talk about that a little bit later. There's some issue on whether Darius and Cyrus are the same person. There's some talk about that, but it's not really important for where we're going today. Today you need to know Darius is in charge. So we're going to start at verse 1 through 5, and I'm going to kind of go through this whole chapter systematically today. And as we go through, I'm going to pull out some points, rather than at the end. I'm not going to try to tie it together at the end, but as we go through this chapter, I'm just going to give you little points that I think you should write down and how they apply to our lives today. So starting at verse 1, it pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom, with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. At this, the administrators, the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Finally, these men said, "We will never find any basis of charges against this man, Daniel, unless it has something to do with the law of his God." So we're at a pretty interesting point again here in Daniel's life. Last week we talked about Daniel being kind of in semi-retirement. He was brought out of retirement to interpret the writing on the wall that King Belshazzar saw. So now we see Daniel again. He's back in service to this new empire, this new king. And Darius must have recognized the capacity that Daniel had to serve. I'm sure that Darius had probably heard the stories of how Daniel had been consulted by not just Belshazzar, but also Nebuchadnezzar, and how when he consulted with those kings, what he said happened, took place. And so Darius recognizes the value that Daniel has to his reign. And what's interesting is that Daniel is appointed as one of three administrators. So you kind of have, you know, the king, and then you have these three administrators under the king. And Daniel gained so much favor with Darius that really Darius wanted to make him the prime minister. This is what you read here. The king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. So you would have the king and then Daniel. Now remember, last week we talked about Daniel being third in charge, right? So it's interesting how God works. Now he's working his way up to number two in charge. And this makes the other administrators jealous. They don't like the fact that Daniel is rising in prominence, and they're not. So really what happens is Daniel becomes an obstacle to their intentions, to their agenda. He's an obstacle. So these other administrators, they have a problem that they have to face right away. And the problem is the fact that they need to get rid of Daniel. And they know that they can't do it based on his character. They couldn't find any flaw in his character, any fault in his character. So they attack his faith. Right? So right away in these first five verses, we get a couple takeaways. The first thing I want to point out, and a lot of us skim over this issue here. The first thing I want to point out, and this is how it applies to our life, is that work is an essential part of expressing our faith. See, Daniel is working. He's serving this king, this empire. And remember, this isn't home for Daniel. This is in exile. Home is Jerusalem. Home is Israel, the promised land. And so he's a foreigner in this land, but he is still serving in this government, serving this empire, serving this king. And he's doing so diligently. He is serving so faithfully to this empire that all the people that work with him, they can't find any fault in his work. Not just his work, but also his character. And so the point that we need to understand is that for us, we are the exact same as Daniel when it comes to our work. Our work, we might view it as secular work. I'm sure Daniel viewed this as secular work. This was not part of God's kingdom work, right? But he made it part of God's kingdom work. He allowed God to use him where he put him to serve his purpose. Now we all have that opportunity every day if we're not retired, right? We go to our place of work, and sometimes we have this idea that this is just something I have to do to support something else. But the reality is our work is a form of worship. Our work is a form of how we serve God. When I was studying for this, I couldn't help but reflect on Paul's writing to the Colossians in chapter 3, verses 23 and 24, when he said, "Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for human masters, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward." And then he goes on to say this, "It is the Lord Christ you are serving." Because that's something we have to remember every day when we wake up and we walk out the door and we're on our way to our place of work. It's not the boss that we're serving. It's Jesus that we're serving. God has put us in that place at this particular time for a specific purpose. And that's what Daniel demonstrates, not just in these first five verses, but throughout this book. We've seen Daniel be faithful in his work. Now, the second thing I want to point out that is a big takeaway for us, and I want you to write this one down too, is that when people cannot find fault in our character, they will attack our faith. When they can't find fault in our character, they will attack our faith. Now here's what's so interesting about this. These other guys that were working and serving with Daniel, they were observing his life very closely. I think they were observing his life very closely because they were watching and waiting for him to screw something up so that they could throw him under the bus. They could run to the king and say, "Look, here's what Daniel did. He messed up. He's not as good as you think he is." The problem, though, was that Daniel was a person of character and integrity. He didn't give them the opportunity to find something wrong with him. Now, here's another thing that's fascinating to me. Not only did they observe his work ethic, his character, but they observed his faith. They knew that that's what set him apart from everybody else. I mean, that's what the statement says. They say, "Look, we can't find anything against Daniel unless it has to do with the law of his God," because they knew in their minds, this is what sets him apart as different from everyone else. The only chance that they had to destroy Daniel's reputation was to cause a conflict between his faith and the system that they worked in, or the system that they lived in. Now, this should lead us to ask a couple questions. It should really cause us to examine our own lives. We should ask this, the question, what do people see when they examine our lives? When people watch us closely, what is it that they notice? Would people find it hard to criticize our character, or do we leave a lot of room for them to attack? You know, I'm sure I'm not the only person that has ever heard someone make a statement saying, that person's a Christian? And what they've done is they've looked at this person's life and they've made some observations about their life and how their life doesn't really match what they're saying. I can't believe that person. And see, Daniel is the exact opposite. See, these men are looking at Daniel and are like, we know that he's a faithful person. That's the only thing that sets him apart and makes him different. See, our enemies are always watching how we act and what we say. And it's important to know that when our enemies are watching us, they're not watching us to praise us when we do something right. They're watching to criticize us when we do something wrong. So our heart's desire should be that our character would point people to our faith and not away from it. All right, let's continue on verse 6. So these administrators and satraps went as a group to the king and said, "May King Darius live forever. The royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisors, and governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or human during the next 30 days, except to you, your majesty, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Now, your majesty, issue the decree and put it in writing so that it cannot be altered, in accordance with the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed." So King Darius put the decree in writing. Now, I have read this chapter several times, and I noticed something interesting as I was preparing for this week. These men lie to the king. They have to trick the king to get him to do what they want to do. They make the statement that they tell the king this, all have agreed to this edict. Now, Daniel, remember, he's an administrator. He's part of the all. And I find it hard to believe that Daniel would have agreed to this edict. So obviously Daniel wasn't included in the meeting, and he didn't get to be with the group when they met with the king. But they informed the king, don't worry, Daniel's okay with this too. All right? Now, real quick, you should write this down. The enemy works through people in an attempt to destroy God's people. All right? This is what this is. This is, in the grand scheme of things, you have two storylines going on. You have the storyline of the Persian Empire, and then you have the storyline of God's plan unfolding. All right? And in this storyline, these men, they're just saying, look, we just don't like Daniel. But in God's storyline, the fact of the matter is that Satan is behind this whole thing. He is behind this attempt to squash Daniel, get rid of him, because he's trying to get rid of the people of God altogether. And people are going to do some crazy things without even recognizing that they're working against God. So these men, they use their system of government in an attempt to get rid of Daniel. Their concern was advancing their own agenda, and the only chance that they had was to use the system against him. Now, I want you to understand something. Hopefully, you're at a point in time when you can kind of survey what's going on in the world, what's going on in our country, and hopefully you can understand that the very same thing could happen to us. You know, I've often asked the question, what happens in a political system, especially in a democracy, when the majority who rules becomes immoral? What happens in a system where the majority rules, the majority of people no longer acknowledge the one true God? This is really a question that is closely related to the question that we've been dealing with throughout this whole series. How do we remain faithful in a foreign land? How do we do that? When the cards are stacked against us, because this is what's going on in Daniel's life right here. The cards are stacked against him, but he remains faithful. He remains steadfast. That's what we're going to see in the next few verses, that Daniel gives us an example of what it looks like to live in this type of environment. And go with me to verse 10. Now, when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened toward Jerusalem. Three times a day, he got down on his knees and he prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. Then these men went as a group and found Daniel praying and asking God for help. So they went to the king and spoke to him about his royal decree. Did you not publish a decree that during the next 30 days, anyone who prays to any god or human being except to you, your majesty, would be thrown into the lion's den? The king answered, the decree stands in accordance with the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed. Now, remember, these guys have been watching Daniel. They have observed his life. They know his character. They know his integrity. And not only do they know that, but they know the pattern of his life. Why issue a decree that targets prayer? Because they knew Daniel was a person of prayer. And his pattern of life doesn't change after the edict is made. He continued to pray daily three times, just as he had always done before the decree was issued. But I want you to notice something about Daniel's prayer life. Daniel goes into his upstairs room at his home and prays. He's praying in private. He's not out there publicly displaying his prayer life. He's not publicly defying the edict. But that didn't matter whether it was in public or private, because these men knew that he would retreat to his home three times a day and pray, and they follow him and just wait. They know the pattern of his life. They know that prayer was one of the things that set him apart. So here's some biggies right here that we need to stop and think about. I want you to write this one down, because we are all wrestling with this question to some degree, if we're honest. When our loyalty to God and government collide, we must remain loyal to God over government. And I'm not asking you to be anti-American. I'm not asking you to be unpatriotic. But what I'm saying is, when our loyalty to God and government collide, we must remain loyal to God over government. You know, one thing that we've already discussed about Daniel is this resolve that Daniel had. Remember, all the way back in chapter 1, it said that Daniel resolved in his heart that he would not defile himself before God. See, the interesting thing about this edict is that it's a 30-day edict, 1 month. 1 month. How easy could it have been for Daniel to say, okay, you know, for 30 days, I'm just not going to pray for 30 days. When 30 days are over, I'm going to go back to what I used to do. I mean, that would have been pretty easy. You know, if I put myself in his position, I think it's pretty tempting, right? It's for 30 days. But Daniel knew that his ultimate loyalty was to the one true God. And Daniel shows us that we have to remain loyal to God above all else. And here's the thing. When we get to that point, when Daniel got to that point, he left the consequences to God. He read the decree. He read the fact, if I keep doing this, if I go into my house and pray and they catch me, I'm going to suffer the consequences, and I'm going to leave it to God. I'm going to leave the consequences up to God. But we have to know, what is it that enables Daniel to get to this point in life? What is it that allows Daniel to continue this pattern when he knows that his life would be in jeopardy? And the fact of the matter is, what enables him to do that is what we see him doing in this moment, prayer. Prayer is essential to the life of faith. That's a big one. You should write that one down. Prayer is essential to the life of faith. Now, for those of you that grew up in church, you know the story. You know where we're getting ready to go. He's going to go into the den. He's going to go into the lion's den. And you also know that he's going to get out of the lion's den alive. For those of you that maybe didn't grow up in church and don't know that story, spoiler alert, he gets out. He doesn't die. But I want you to know this. Daniel did not overcome the lions by praying when he was in the den. Daniel overcame the lions by praying three times a day for decades before he got into the den. That's a big one. He didn't get out of that den because when he got thrown in there, he started praying. He got out of the den because he had been praying for years before he got to that point. How many of us, when we survey our prayer life, could say, you know what? Three times a day, my neighbors, my coworkers know that I'm going to retreat to my cubicle or to my desk, and I'm going to spend a few minutes just praying and thanking God, praying to and thanking God. See, Daniel gives us this pattern that will help us become lion tamers. Let's go to 13. I'm just going to kind of peel through the next five or six verses. Then they said to the king, Daniel, who is one of your exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, your majesty, or to the decree you put in writing. He still prays three times a day. Now notice something here. When the king heard this, he was greatly distressed. He was determined to rescue Daniel and made every effort until sundown to save him. Now, here's the reason the king was distressed, because the king recognized in that moment, They pulled a fast one on me. They got one over on me. He probably reflected back to the meeting. He's like, you know what? Now I remember Daniel wasn't even at the meeting. And the king thinks so highly of Daniel that now he puts his reputation on the line for a whole day. I'm going to do something about this. I got to get Daniel out of this predicament. But here are those guys again. They come to the king as a group and they say, hey, remember your majesty, verse number 15, that according to the law of the Medes and Persians, no decree or edict that the king issues can be changed. King, you can't change your mind now. You can't do it. So the king caves to the peer pressure. In verse 16, the king gave the order and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. Now, notice this. The king said to Daniel, may your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you. Now, in other translations, I'm trying to remember what translation, the New King James Version, I believe I was reading earlier this week, the statement that the king made is, your God will rescue you from the lions. Now, I find that very fascinating that this king, who's no doubt a polytheist, believes in many gods, he's confident in Daniel's God. So verse number 17, a stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den. The king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the rings of his nobles so that Daniel's situation might not be changed. Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night without eating and without any entertainment being brought to him, and he could not sleep. You know, I don't know. I wonder if the king was praying at that time. But nevertheless, whether he was praying or not, he was so distraught he couldn't sleep. And at the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice. Daniel, servant, this is a great title. Daniel, servant of the living God. Has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue from the lions? And Daniel answered, may the king live forever. My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me because I was found innocent in his sight. Nor have I ever done anything wrong before you, your majesty. The king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him because he had trusted in his God. See, that's the leave the consequences to God. Remain faithful and leave the consequences to God. At the king's command, the men who falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den along with their wives and children. And before they reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. You know, this is the theme that has been running over and over and over in this book. God exalts the humble and he opposes the proud. God exalts the humble and he opposes the proud. And here we see again that God has exalted Daniel and he has opposed those proud people against him. And again, as a reaction to the faithfulness, and I'm making a switch here, okay? This is not the faithfulness of Daniel. As a reaction to the faithfulness of God to his people, the king makes a positive response to God. You see, this has been a pattern that we've seen. Daniel remains faithful. God is faithful to Daniel, and people recognize it. The king goes on to say, he wrote to all the nations and the peoples of every language on all the earth, may you prosper greatly. I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. This is going to finish out the chapter. So Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. So there we go. We have, again, faithful people of God experiencing the faithfulness of God, causing people to recognize who God is. Now, this is what I want you to write down. This is the takeaway from this section. Impossible situations open people's eyes to the possibility of a living God. See, this guy, this Darius, he was serving all kinds of gods. But I think he makes a distinguishing mark here between Daniel's God and all the other gods. See, Daniel's God's the living God. All those other ones must be dead. They don't act like this. They can't intervene like this. Impossible situations open people's eyes to the possibility of a living God. Now, here's something that's kind of tough for us to swallow. There are going to be times in our lives, Daniel experienced this, there are going to be times in our lives that we will suffer for doing what is right. If we're really faithful people, there are going to be times in our life that we suffer for doing what is right. This isn't the first time that we've seen this type of situation unfold in this book. You think back to the fiery furnace just a few weeks ago. When you have the three, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they suffer for doing what was right. And it was the same type of situation in both instances. It was a moment when their faithfulness and their ruling authorities came into conflict. Their loyalty to God and their loyalty to the state was challenged. And in both instances, their faithfulness allowed them to experience the faithfulness of God, and it opened people's eyes to the possibility of a living God. I want you to turn with me, and we're going to wrap this up over to 1 Peter. First Peter chapter 3. It's a great way to kind of end this section of Daniel. First Peter chapter 3, verses 15 through 17. But in your hearts, revere Christ as Lord. See, this is that resolve. This is that resolve that Daniel had. He purposed in his heart. But in your hearts, revere Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect, keeping a clear conscience, so that those who speak maliciously against your good behavior in Christ may be ashamed of their slander. For it is better, if it is God's will, to suffer for doing good than for doing evil. And I'm not going to stop. I'm going to keep going for just a second. For Christ also suffered once for sins, the righteous for the unrighteous, to bring you to God. He was put to death in the body, but made alive in the spirit. See, remaining faithful in a foreign land requires trusting in the faithfulness of God. Sometimes we think it's all about our faith. Sometimes we think it's all about what we're doing. But the reality is, It's really about his faithfulness, what he's doing. And Daniel was able to trust God and experience his faithfulness in that moment of suffering, in that moment of what seemed like an impossibility. And what we get a picture of in 1 Peter chapter 3 is the fact that there are going to be times in our life when we experience the same kind of situations where it might seem impossible. But we know, we've seen, we've experienced the faithfulness of God through the suffering of Jesus Christ. Right? And God isn't putting us in any situation that he wasn't first willing to put himself into. He isn't asking us to suffer having never experienced suffering. But he is okay with allowing us to suffer because he knows in our suffering we will experience his faithfulness. So remaining faithful in a foreign land requires trusting in the faithfulness of God. We sang that song, Graves into Gardens. Things kind of have a way of taking on a new meaning when you go through difficult times in life. You know, he turns graves into gardens. He turns beauty or ashes to beauty. I mean, think about that. He turns death into life. In whatever situation that you're experiencing, I know there's a variety of situations out there, and we're all kind of experiencing some new territory with everything that's going on in our world. The message that we need to walk away with is that even when things seem impossible, God's still at work. And if we want to remain faithful, one of the keys, if I could encourage you just with one thing, one of the keys, if we want to remain faithful, if we want to be like Daniel, we got to pray like Daniel. We got to pray like Daniel. Now, I did the math. If you figure up three times a day for, he was probably about 83 years old when this happened. And this wasn't the only time that Daniel prayed, right? I'm sure he was praying all the time. But if you just count these three times a day, it's almost 100,000 prayers. 100,000 prayers. You know, maybe we should make it our goal for this coming year as we wrap this year up and we go into next year. Maybe we should make it our goal to pray 365 prayers. Just one every day and see how God moves. Would you pray with me? Father, thank you so much for loving us, for suffering on our behalf through your Son, Jesus Christ. Thank you for being a God who can take what seems impossible and make it a reality. God, I ask that as we wrap our time up together today and as we walk out these doors, that you would continue to allow your Spirit to speak to us, to change us, to mold us, to shape us, that we would become people of character and integrity and faithfulness, that when people see the pattern of our life, they would notice that it's our faith that sets us apart. And God, I thank you that even in those most difficult times in life, you don't abandon us, but you walk through those times with us. I pray that you would be with each person that's here this morning in this building and those that may be watching on Facebook, that you would just reassure them of how faithful you are and how you've demonstrated that to us through the death and resurrection of Jesus. It's in his name I pray. Amen.